About a lot of things beyond my capacity, at least for discussion. Personalities, Brahma, Shiva, Narada, many exalted persons, Lakshmi Devi, they all try to offer their prayers. They all did offer their prayers. And from the Lord's side, every living entity has a relationship. And from the Lord's side, and from the living entity side also has a relationship with the Lord. The Lord doesn't need anything. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami explains very beautifully in the very first chapter, in the beginning. Even Srila Prabhupada also narrates this point many times, that the Lord expands because he wants to experience various rasas, various mellows. So whether it is the enemies in the form of Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha, or his devotees, it is completely up to him what the mellow he wants to experience, chivalrous mellow or some joyful mellow, friendly, dasya, so many different mellows. So for each of the living entity, they can offer whatever their prayers, and the Lord reciprocates with them in that relationship. And in this context, when Lord Brahma, Shiva, Narada, Lakshmi Devi, everybody offered prayers, and the Lord was very merciful. In this particular context, he was waiting, or he was not waiting, but there was something else. The reason for which he appeared is to give the opportunity to interact or exchange with his pure devotee, Prahlad Maharaj. So, after they have all offered their prayers, Narada Muni approached Prahlad Maharaj and said, "You speak to Narasimhadev." I'm sorry, Brahma approaches, correct? Lord Brahma approaches and says, "Please speak to, please pacify the Lord. Because it is for you the reason for the Lord's appearance." I don't know about the transcendental emotions or the ecstasy or the anxiety, if it were, that Prahlad Maharaj may have felt in the assembly of so many exalted personalities to have the opportunity to offer or speak or say something in honor of the Lord. I have no clue about that, but I was just praying in a subtle way that I was hoping that... Anyway, when I saw Nityananda Mahaprabhu, I skipped a couple of beats because it's mundane anxiety, he's my mentor, and to be able to sit here and talk, take some composure. But Prahlad Maharaj recognized his own insignificant nature, he doesn't have to recognize his insignificant nature, but he felt his insignificant nature amongst all those. But still, in a humble mood, he approached the Lord. And when he approached the Lord, something very mystical happened. The Lord put his hand on the boy's head. And I was hearing one time in the Bhagavatam class about Dhruva Maharaj pastime. In case of Dhruva Maharaj also, when the Lord appears, he puts the shankha on the boy's head. And Dhruva Maharaj was also not like an elderly person or anything. He was also very child at that time, in his childhood. When the Lord appears, he puts the shankha, his transcendental conch, on the head of Dhruva Maharaj. Then he begins to offer his prayers. So I was thinking, kind of similarity. It's the Lord's affection. It's the Lord's gentle, caring nature that he is showing towards his devotee. So, at that point, we read that how the different types of transformations have occurred in Prahlad Maharaj. Is it that until that time, Prahlad Maharaj, after that time, Prahlad Maharaj became transcendental, until that time, Prahlad Maharaj was not transcendental? Until the Lord placed his hand? Is that the right, or is that possible? I'm looking at everyone. No. He's always under the protection of the Lord. He's always beyond the senses. He's always transcendental. The point being, for a pure devotee of the Lord, it does not matter how the mercy of the Lord comes, how the affection he sees. He is able to see the Lord's mercy and affection in all sorts of interactions. Especially when he sees that, he is even more exalted, elated, or blissful. That's the personal interaction. Very, very significant interaction. So then he begins to offer his prayers. How he did that is this verse. Astau sit harim ekagra manasa. Stuti is the word. Stuti means to glorify. Stava, we have Radha, Radhika, Stava. It is the glorification or the prayers, compilation of prayers. So when we see an exalted person, automatically we try to appreciate. Even in mundane world also, we see several people. We see them and we talk to them and we say, oh, I like this about you. And so when somebody sees the Lord, it is stotra, it is stuti. So he's glorifying, he is offering his prayers. How he is offering to prayers unto Lord Hari? Eka agra manasa. The manasa is ekagra, single pointed. As we hear in Bhagavad Gita also, vyavasayatmika buddhi. Ekeha. That eka, that's single-pointed attention, samahitaha, proper is translated, very attentive, or without any diversions to other subjects. Without any diversions. It's very difficult. It's very difficult in this world to not be diverted from anything. We do something Monday through Friday. We need a diversion Saturday and Sunday. It's called vacation. And after the diversion, we have to come back. Rupa Goswami describes this as bhoga tyaga. We give up, we enjoy. We give up, we enjoy. Giving up is because we want to enjoy. That tendency is there. But Prahlad Maharaj does not, his attention is samahitaha. Prema gadgadaya vacha. How is he offering his prayers? His voice is faltering because of his transcendental emotions of love unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Tanyasta hridayekshanaha. With his heart and sight fixed at the lotus feet of Lord Narasimhadev. So, Prabhupada has brilliantly given his purport on this verse. He talks about few key points as to how we can attain that stage what Prahlad Maharaj is experiencing, that single-pointed attention. In Bhagavatam, first canto, there is a verse where it says, Tasmat ekena manasa bhagavan sattvatam patihi. Shrotavya kirtitavyascha dheya pujascha nityada. Tasmat ekena manasa, with single pointed attention, without any other deviation, if one offers, then the Lord Hari is the protector of such persons. And he proves from time to time how he protects. From our side, the assignment is, as it may seem simple, that, oh, we just have to be attentive. But it's very difficult in the mundane or in the material world. I'm sure we all have that experience. Diversions. It's very easy to be diverted from the path. There are different diversions. People all the time complain that I cannot stay fixed, I cannot stay focused. Work, studies, occupational duties, even while performing direct devotional service activities also, it's very difficult. So one time, in a jungle, there's big jungle, and then there is a tree. And at the tree, there is a small turtle. And this turtle is trying to walk slowly, slowly, slowly. It's crawling towards the tree. And with great effort, it tries to climb up the tree. Somehow it climbs up the tree. And with great effort, it goes to the branch. And then it slowly crawls to the branch, and then it stands there. And then it looks left and right, and then with its two forward legs, it jumps in the air. What happens? It falls down. So the turtle falls down on the ground, on the field. So again, it brushes off. Again, it starts to walk slowly, slowly, slowly. Again, it starts to climb and then goes to the branch with its forward legs. It tries to jump with the hope that it can fly. And then it jumps, boom, on the floor, on the field, ground. It happens 3-4 times. And then there are a couple of birds, literally couple, wife and husband. Birds. They're watching this turtle doing this. And the wife, she bird, tells or asks, "Honey, I think it is time to tell her that she is adopted." So the bird is adopted, or the turtle is adopted. The birds have adopted the turtle. No matter how much the bird, the turtle tries, it cannot fly because her body is not fit for flying. It's a turtle body. Under the false illusion, simply because the turtle has the parents of who are birds, unfortunately, the turtle was imagining that, oh, I belong to this family, so I can fly. But somebody has to tell that, oh, by the way, you're adopted. So my inspiration from that story is several. One of the inspirations is we falsely identify with the body. We adopt the body as ourselves. And we try to do different things, except that one thing, except fixing the lotus, our heart and sight at the lotus feet of Krishna, we try to do all other things. What happens? Failure. I can try again. Let me try hard, because last time I was lackadaisical, I was slacking. I can try a little bit with more attention, more focus. You know, in Olympics, the precision rate, the difference between the first gold medal winner and the third, the bronze medal winner, is microseconds. So to that extent, they fight or they compete, or what goes behind the moment of their winning is years and years of practice. And we have the holy name, chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. We are given this opportunity 25,000 times a day, at least. And so many diversions. Cell phone rings. Remember something. All the planning for the week, or planning for the week that has gone by, what has went right, all the evaluations, estimations. That's the time for it, doing all those things, chanting time. Whereas we have the opportunity, the same opportunity, because the touchstone, the Lord's hand, what Krishna has placed, or Narasimhadeva has placed on Prahlad Maharaj. I was hearing from Nityananda Pran Prabhu that lecture where he described that when Lord Hari or Vishnu has placed the conch, we have the similar opportunity. With the holy name, we can experience the same type of affection, the same type of mercy that's coming from the Lord. It's called Chintamani, the stone, touchstone. Whatever we desire is acquired by the chanting of the holy name. And in this verse, Prabhupada is saying that fixed mind is a result of yoga siddhi. It's not ordinary thing. Mystic perfection. We have to perfect that mystic yogas. Do we really have that capacity? No, it's hard. We have falsely identified so many things, and like I was telling someone that a Mac system does not work with Windows. Compatibility issue. The material world, how much we try to succeed or how much we try to. But there is an opportunity in the spiritual practices to excel our practice. How much practice do we need? Because this is the, people say it's not life and death thing, but this is the life and death question. Our chanting of the holy name is the life and death question. Our fixing ability to fix the sight or our mind at the feet of Krishna at the time of leaving this body is a matter of perfection. It does not simply cannot be achieved by any kind of yogic perfection. Even if one were to try that, it is beyond. It is beyond the senses, Prabhupada is saying. That's the stage where Prahlad Maharaj is situated. So what is the way then for us? Prabhupada explains that he is freed from material diversions. His mind is fixed upon the lotus feet of the Lord, and he is beyond the senses. And then he says, because he was engaged in service, he felt transcendentally situated. So service, we have numerous opportunities to engage in service of the Lord. Service of the devotees. Service of the living entities. With the intention that that service is going at the feet of Krishna. That service is directed to please the spiritual master and Krishna. If that is the focus, then Prabhupada says, then that will lead or enable one to lead to the platform of this samadhi. I was reading in Srimad Bhagavatam in relation to this in 6th canto. We read that recently. 13th chapter, 69th verse. Prabhupada talks about samadhi. So anyone who is chanting Hare Krishna he is in samadhi. Anyone who is cooking for Krishna, he is in samadhi. Anyone who is typing for Krishna, he is in samadhi. Anyone who is working in the field for Krishna, he is in samadhi. Because his consciousness is that I am doing here for satisfaction of Krishna. Anukulyena Krishnanu Silanam. Anusilanam. Cultivation of Krishna knowledge favorably, not unfavorably. Then it is perfection. Bhaktir Uttama. Anukulyena. Anyabhilashita Shunyam. When you cook, if you think, oh, this nice thing is being cooked, I shall eat it very nicely, then it is not Krishna. But while cooking, if you think, let me do it very nicely so that Krishna will taste it, it is Krishna consciousness. The same thing, activities is the same, but the consciousness is different. That is samadhi. So samadhi is not very extraordinary thing. One has to become simply serious and sincere to Krishna. Then he is in samadhi. That is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. So it's not that we have to do 10 million things. Whatever we are doing, we can do it at least gradually with an intention to satisfy for Krishna, or with Krishna in the center. We don't have to be diverted by many things. Even in devotional service also, I get bogged down from time to time that I have to do this, I have to do that. But where is the attention? Is it on Krishna? No. It's like the aham mameti or I'm the doer kind of a thing. Then it doesn't yield any good result. Result being the ability to fix our heart and mind at the feet of Krishna. We have ample opportunities. They say out of sight, out of mind. The devotees, when we see them, they remind us of Krishna. The deities, when we see them, we are seeing Krishna. So many opportunities. And then the other thing being most important, I felt, is the diversions. We want vacation. We cannot do something constantly. One time, a wife and husband, wife asked the husband that, oh dear, it's our 10th anniversary. Where are we going for vacation? The husband says, yes, I do remember that. I'm planning for us to go to the African jungle safari. And the wife asks, oh really, that's so fantastic. If that's what you're planning for 10th year anniversary, I wonder what you plan for 25th anniversary. The husband says, I will bring you back. It's imperfect. There is no way you can enjoy in the immaterial world, no matter how much we try. The same wife asks the husband. One time she looks at the mirror and then she says, oh, honey, I think my skin has become not so attractive anymore. I think I'm gaining weight. I think I'm becoming fat. I think my face isn't as attractive as it used to be. But still, can you say something that compliments me? I feel so low right now, just looking at myself in the mirror. And the husband, usually what he does is, as in any typical husband-wife relationship, he's playing on video games or watching some TV on sports, and then he, oh, what did you say, honey? Oh, a nice compliment. I think your eyesight is still perfect. That's the compliment he gives. I don't think many are, since you're brahmacharis, you may not have gotten it, but. So what is the reason I shared that joke is to say there is some positive we have to look for. They say putting the positive spin. irrespective of how much we don't have anything in this material world, we still have to look for something positive. And he is the positive. Despite Upadrutas, the Bhagavatam says, unfortunate condition, despite the not being able to fix the mind, always disturbed, so many slow, dull mind, despite so many disqualifications. The simple activities that we can do in our day-to-day life, they can please Krishna, and we just have to put him in the center. We just have to take the shelter of those who are giving that direction, take the shelter of those who are guiding on this path. And then we can sufficiently experience that, and then we can sufficiently offer prayers or glorify. Glorification of exalted personality is not an ordinary thing. And in this kind of situation, Ernest Hemingway said, courage is grace under pressure. I like that very much. Whenever I think of Prahlad Maharaj, I think of courage. So much pressure. He's being harassed by his own father. But he is always courageous. He's not the kind of person who will charge at Hiranyakashipu and say, you're nonsense, you're this, you're that. Not that kind of courage. He was always harassed for chanting or for hearing or whatever he was doing for service to Krishna, but he kept his quietness. He's gracious. And right now, everybody is not intimidated, but afraid to approach Narasimhadeva. But he has the courage to see the Lord face to face and to glorify. His courage is because of hearing from his spiritual master. His courage is because he followed from the instructions of his spiritual master. His courage is his heart and mind never deviated from the lotus feet of Krishna. So he was gracious, even under difficult situations. Inspiration. So I will pause there and see if there is any comments. Mukunda.
Thank you. My question is actually in relation to the last verse, because there was a point that you brought up that, when Narasimhadeva put his hand on Prahlad's head, then the verse says that Prahlad, at that point, he became transcendentally situated. And so you were making the point that Prahlad Maharaj was already transcendentally situated. But I was just, it just made me think of that verse in Bhagavad Gita that says that, Even a devotee may have desires like rivers flowing to the ocean, but because he's the ocean, it's undisturbed. So is it? I guess this is just speculation because it's not really said. But is it possible that Prahlad Maharaj may have still been there? May be desires, but he was already a perfected devotee, so nothing was disturbing him anyway. And then when Narasimhadeva put his paw on his head, then even though desires went away, like the rivers just disappeared. And there's just the ocean. I don't know. I was just thinking, because otherwise why would the verse say that he then became materially free and transcendental and everything?
I'm looking at Nitin and Pran Prabhu. Would you like to please answer? No, I also don't want to speculate. I was under the impression that he was liberated from before also, or he was transcendental before also. But again, in this, what you are asking, I don't know, I have not heard before, so I don't want to speculate. Rather, we'll have him answer. Prabhu? Would you like to answer, please?
In
In the purport, Prabhupada writes, if he quotes those two verses about transcending the modes of nature, and even if one is born of any type of lower birth, he can approach the supreme destination. So that's the context. And then Prabhupada writes, on the strength of these verses from Bhagavad Gita, it is evident that although Prahlad Maharaj was born in a demoniac family, and although virtually demoniac blood flowed within his body, he was cleansed of all material bodily contamination because of his exalted position as a devotee. In other words, such impediments could not stop him from progressing, for he was directly in touch with the personality of Godhead. Those who are physically and mentally contaminated by atheism cannot be situated on the transcendental platform, but as soon as one is freed from material contamination, he is immediately fit. So, Prahlad Maharaj, before I say Prahlad Maharaj, when we talk of being situated transcendentally, there are grades within that. There is perfection, there is more perfection, and then there is most. And the touch of the Lord removes from Prahlad Maharaj any of those physical, if you will, in terms of being born in a demoniac family, demoniac blood running through him. All those are material things. It doesn't matter now. It's the iron rod is fully in fire. So is Prahlad's consciousness transformed from matter or dull to transcendental? No. It has gone from very transcendental to utmost transcendental. Because the touch of the Lord has a certain impact. The Lord has taken him to the highest position of perfection. So he's transcendental. Now within that there are grades of perfection. Another way to look at it, although it doesn't apply to Prahlad Maharaj fully, is in the Bhagavad Gita when Krishna says, Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma No Shochati Nakankshati Samasarveshu Bhuteshu Mad Bhaktim Labhate Param. So the first order of business is to become transcendentally situated, and bhakti begins from there. So that's the usual question. If bhakti begins then, what was it before that? So Jiskar, that's the practice of bhakti. This is the perfection of bhakti. Similar treatment is in the first canto, fifth chapter, fifth, sixth, seventh, when Narada is speaking about his life. He was very transcendentally situated, hearing from the Bhaktivedantas, walking all alone to the north, and he sees the Lord in his heart, and suddenly the Lord disappears and he hears a voice, in this life you will not see me again. So it's described that that's when his devotional service began. So it doesn't mean that it hasn't done anything previously. It means that from the sense of perfection, the grades of perfection are growing. Because what Prahlad Maharaj endured, a person in bodily conception cannot endure it. Then the touch of the Lord has to have some effect. Right? Otherwise, he's already transcendentally situated, the Lord touched him, has no impact. There has to be some effect. That even higher grades, that all the symptoms are fully manifesting now. So there's grades of perfection. That's how we understand it.
I have a question.
You were talking about distractions. So what is it that makes a person distracted? Why is anyone distracted? material mind or the conception of I and mine, aham mameti, from those two, when the mind is engaged in those two conceptions, because the soul is different and the soul's roots are in Krishna, what that nourishes the soul has never been provided or has never been taken care. So in absence of being in touch with the soul or the heart of the hearts, in general conception, or the default position is mind, what I think of myself to be and what I feel myself to be. So out of that material conception or material thoughts, chasing after something that will bring the ultimate satisfaction, anandamayo abhyasat, because we are always pleasure seeking, the soul is eternally seeking that pleasure, and Krishna is the source of that bliss. Except Krishna, everything else, there are millions and trillions of things. There is only one Krishna. So as long as the mind is engaged in anything other than Krishna, there are so many diversions. You were asking why? Is it because it's because we are always looking for happiness. We are searching for something that will complete us, the incompleteness. Om Purnam, Adha Purnam. So we are feeling that incompleteness, but we don't even know. The material mind doesn't even know, because that's something above the mind, the transcendental knowledge. Unless a transcendental personality comes into our lives and opens our eyes with the transcendental knowledge, it's difficult to say what we are looking for. But we are looking for it in all wrong places, and we are looking for it in all wrong circumstances and times. So we want to seek the happiness, but if the adoption is to the body, then we are subjected to be diverted. If the starting, the foundation principle of I and mine is correct, then whatever is built on it is will also be yielding the right result. If the foundation principle itself is wrong, the whole math. I will get to know if I pass the exam or not later, hopefully. Yes, please.
Thank you for that answer. While you were speaking, I was just thinking that one of the reasons we become distracted is because we don't have... we haven't fixed our mind on Krishna. And in this verse, actually, Prahlad Maharaj fixed his mind and sight upon Lord Nishimadev with full attention. He was in trance just by looking at Lord Nishimadev. So I was just thinking about that while you were speaking. You know, we become distracted because we don't have that conviction, that the goal in mind. We don't have that focus, that attention fixed on Krishna.
Thank you. So I was, thank you for bringing that point. While you were speaking, I remembered that what I heard, especially when chanting, the mind is going to all different things, other diversions, because there is nothing material about chanting. There is nothing material about any of the transcendental activities as such. But the mind is material. And mind's disposition is that it's always chanchala. It's always futile. It's always looking for here and there. So when we try to use something that's mundane, in transcendental thing, it requires a lot of practice. It's not easy. It's so easily, there are opportunities, ample opportunities for the mind to be agitated or disturbed, but Krishna says through practice you can engage the mind. So, just to add the same thing that. Please.
There is a principle that our mind is always attracted, our attention is always attracted and kept by the object of our love and affection, and whatever that is. So if we have, or anyone has, affection for certain things or people, if their presence is there, then whatever they're doing, their attention goes there. For example, suppose a person's mind is lusty, then doesn't matter, even if they're driving, and that, you know, they have to drive carefully, but if they see a very attractive woman or attractive man, that their attention will take, even at the risk of their life. Because the object of love or affection attracts the mind. Or if someone's attracted to something, others may not notice it, this particular person will notice. Oh, did you see that? Did you see her jewelry? Did you see the dress she was wearing? Did you see what toy he was in his hand that he had? Because it's my object of affection. Or if I have great affection for Facebook or any of those things, even if people are talking to me, my full attention is given to my object of affection. So our whole practice of Krishna consciousness is to make Krishna our object of affection. As that develops, our attention improves. Even if you're standing in front of the deity, someone else who's bringing an object or a person that we are naturally attracted to, our attention will go from Krishna to them. Or anything. And this is why, while in the whole practice of chanting, is we're constantly trying to bring our attention to Krishna, that he becomes the object of our affection. That is our try, that's an attempt. And that is why, until that happens, progressively as we are developing Krishna to be the object of our activities, like you were reading, the person is constantly thinking of Krishna. You read from the sixth canto, that this is for Krishna. I am doing this for Krishna, for pleasing Krishna. By doing so, in all our activities, he becomes the object of our affection. Then attention naturally follows with it. Until then, it's, you said, vyavasayatmika buddhi, so it is avyavasaya. It is distributed among different objects of affection. And so that's why here, ekagra manasa has that importance, that there was no one else or nothing else that could take Prahlad's attention from Narsingadev, because he's the object of love.
Acharanishtha Prabhu, it's 8:31.
I just wanted to explore a little more this point of Prahlad's position, because we know that also he does say at the end of his prayers, he said that actually I'm here because the Lord sent me here. You sent me here to exhibit the characteristics of a pure devotee. And there's another place in Purport where Prabhupada mentions that he's a Nitya Siddha Mahabhagavat devotee. I know in the chapter somewhere else it says he placed the conch on his head, and by that he imparted Divya Gyan, or spiritual knowledge. But I was just curious if you had read somewhere that that was to elevate him to a more perfectional stage.
In the Nectar of Devotion, Prahlad Maharaj is quoted as a Kripa Siddha. that is his, it was the transcendental and very unique mercy of Narada Muni. For everyone else, sadhana is the program, is the process. He's given as to how there's something called honorary degree, and one should not rely that, oh, I will also get an honorary degree. In that context, he's quoted as a Krupa Siddha. It's a very special dose of mercy given by Narada Muni. As far as Prahlad Maharaj's personal expressions of it, we'll hear that the humility is just begun. One of the characteristics of a Sharanagata is Dainya. Now, generally when we say humility, the Sanskrit word for humility is Vinamra. What else? What is humility? Most important thing for us. In those grades of humility, there is Dainya, which is considered to be abject humility. It's like the highest grade of humility. We start with feeling humble in the first, as far as identity, and it grows to Dainya. That's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur refers to. Dainya means abject humility. These prayers are about to begin. You'll notice the abject humility with which he narrates. That of all these people, he says, Suradayaha, Api Vipra, all these great Brahmins, great demigods, Lakshmi Devi, Lord Shiva, among all of them, I'm being asked to say something. What can I say that they haven't already said? Yet, because Lord Brahma has asked, therefore. So, from our understanding of what does perfection look like, to say that Prahlad was not purified or not already perfect is not clear, because he's already given the dose of mercy by Narada. So our understanding is within perfection there are grades. Of course, Prabhupada says, because he says that he has demonic blood running in his veins. Now, I don't know demonic blood running in his veins, what context that would have for him when he's already exhibited himself as a super devotee. If the question is he in bhava stage, became prema stage, I don't know the answer for that. But definitely these are symptoms of bhava and prema. It says prema gadagadaya. It is on the stage of prema here.
It's interesting because it sounds like we're finding two different definitions of Prahlad's position by Srila Prabhupada, which it does happen. Prabhupada often may mention two things and we have to try to reconcile. I was just... It says here in the purport that Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu has given considerable discussions about Nitya Siddha and Sadhana Siddha devotees. Nitya Siddha devotees come from Vaikuntha to the material world to teach by their personal example. This is text 3 of the 10th chapter. Prahlad Maharaja says, "You've sent me to the material world to exhibit the symptoms of a pure devotee." And then he says, "In spite of coming to this material world, the Nitya Siddha devotee is never attracted by allurements of material enjoyment. The perfect example is Prahlad Maharaj, who is a Nitya Siddha, a Mahabhagavat devotee. Although Prahlad was born in the family of Hiranyakashipu, an atheist, he was never attached to any kind of materialistic enjoyment. Desiring to exhibit the symptoms of a pure devotee, the Lord tried to induce Prahlad Maharaj to take benedictions, but he did not accept them. On the contrary, by his personal example, he showed the symptoms of a pure devotee." In other words, the Lord himself had no desire to send his pure devotee to the material world, nor does the Bodhi have any material purpose in coming. He teaches the common man how to become a devotee. So interesting point to try to wrap our head around.
Completely distracted point. One of the things that we had a whole session at the Govardhan Eco Village is a topic called Samanvaya. And Samanvaya in Sanskrit or in English means reconciliation. And the person who was, I guess, facilitating is Kaunteya Prabhu. He was quoting from our Brahma Sutras. So the first Brahma Sutra is Janmadhyasya Yataha or Athatu Brahma Jigyasa. Next is Janmadhyasya Yataha. And there is one more, Shastra Yonitvat. And the fourth is Samanvayat, another word. And the point Vyasadeva is making is that the knowledge about the personality of Godhead can only be received from Shastra Yonitvat, from scripture. And then he goes to Samanvaya, that in scripture you will find apparent paradoxes. It says this and it says that. And a person, a student, is supposed to Samanvaya, find that reconciliation. And unless one finds, because we heard so many times that all paradoxes and contradictions are resolved in Krishna. Like here he is angry at Hiranyakashipu, he is very loving towards Prahlad, but he loves both of them. So it's not mundane this or that. And so it was the whole exercise was trying to find how you can come to reconciliations. It was a beautiful exercise. This is a total side point. But so he gave examples. So he made the devotees debate. So let's say Mukunda is for Ahimsa milk, and I am for whatever milk, it doesn't matter, it's being offered to Krishna. Let's say that's the thing I profess, and he professes Ahimsa milk. So he got us to sit across from each other, and he told Mukunda, "You will speak on behalf of commercial milk." Yeah. And I will speak on Ahimsa milk. What it made the person do is suddenly leave their position and start thinking at the other one. And the persons who were debating became like, yeah, commercial milk. Although deep inside, they want Ahimsa milk. But because they have to debate from this side, the point was to see things from the side of others. We hold on to our views so strongly that the other person's view is usually not available, or we don't see, we don't want to see. But from that side, then you'd have to know the circumstances in which this is okay, the circumstances in which that's okay, and you'd learn to begin a language where we can hear each other. That was Samanvaya. It was a beautiful exercise with it. Yeah.
Okay, 8:41 time. Any other comments concluding? Or? Okay. All right. Thank you all very much. Thank you. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.